Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Are you afraid to be hungry? What if hunger isn't the problem? What if everything you've been taught to fear about hunger is actually keeping you trapped? Because somewhere along the way, we have all learned that hunger is something to avoid, suppress, manage, or control. But what if hunger isn't your enemy? What if it is your body's greatest gift? Today, we're exposing one of the biggest lies in the weight loss industry, and it could completely change the way you think about food forever. So welcome back to the show, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. Today, we're talking about something that every single one of you experiences, yet very few of you understand: hunger. And most of us have spent years trying to avoid it. We snack before we're hungry. We eat because the clock says it's time to. We panic when we feel hunger. And we've been conditioned to believe that hunger means that something is wrong. But what if this is all backwards? Joining us again is Shirley Billingmeyer. She is the founder of Innergetics, author of Inner Eating, and a pioneer in helping people reconnect with the body's natural eating wisdom long before mindful eating became mainstream. And so for more than 40 years, Shirley has helped people lose weight, end food obsession, and rebuild trust with their bodies without relying on deprivation, willpower, or drugs. Today, we're asking a simple but powerful question. Have we completely misunderstood hunger? So Shirley, so good to have you back here. This is such a popular topic. Right before we hit record, we were talking about, you know, suppressing hunger, people, you know, taking pills so they're not hungry anymore. People are injecting these GLPs to control their hunger. Why are so many people afraid of being hungry?
I love what you said in the beginning, where you said, what if you discovered that hunger was really a gift? And it is. Mm. It is the gift of understanding when you are meant to start eating. And I always bring it back to the infant. The infant knows when they're hungry. They will cry. They will let you know in no uncertain terms that they are hungry and they need to eat. But why have we buried it? Why do we not trust it anymore? Why do we want to just ignore it or fear it? It really comes down to fearing it eventually. And so I unpack that very gift that we were given at birth and look at it as a gift instead of, and what you said, which is exactly right, it's not our enemy. It's a part of us. It's who we are meant to connect to. It is the start of what determines when we need to start eating. It's our message. It's our signal within us.
So when did this become something people try to avoid, like the hunger side of things?
That's an interesting question, because I would say people don't even remember what hunger feels like. They say, I don't know what hunger feels like. Or like one of my tennis friends said, Shirley, I'm always hungry. And that's when I would say, not every feeling below the neck is hunger. And it can be buried so easily, so quickly, by parents just misunderstanding it. That's why I love to teach this process to young moms, because it's like they will start working with me and they'll go, oh my word, I am learning from my infant. How does she or he know if they're hungry? And I haven't figured this out yet. So how do we lose it? Where does that hunger go? When do we start burying it? It can be as simple and in the beginning as this. Let's say that a well-meaning parent hearing from a doctor that the infant is meant to drink 4 ounces of milk. Well, so they have 4 ounces of milk in the bottle. And when that 4 ounces, 3 ounces are eaten, the infant eats the 3 ounces, but then that infant turns that little mouth and it tries to clench the lips or push that bottle away. They don't want the other ounce of milk. But Well-meaning parents, well-meaning doctors said, but you need 4 ounces. So all of a sudden they start prodding that nipple on their little lips. And the infant processes this. They think, okay, that feeling in my gut went away if I ate. I wonder if this feeling's going to go away if I keep eating. And guess what? It not only goes away, you get a hug. You get praised. And then it continues on. You'll see when a child finishes their food, they get praised because they
Right.
finish their food. Now we keep overriding that feeling of hunger. And what is that feeling of hunger? It's when hunger goes away. It's the feeling of nothingness, balance. That's what we've lost. And like a 9-year-old that I worked with said, oh, I see, we got comfortable with uncomfortableness. I thought that was brilliant coming from a 9-year-old. So that's how it can start that early.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with a semi-poor family. I mean, we weren't rich, we weren't poor, but my mom's side of the family was, and they really struggled growing up. And so my grandfather, all I remember is like him saying, "Eat, eat, eat." And when we were done, it was like, "Okay, now eat this dessert." And we were like, if we didn't finish our plate, it was like something was wrong. And I'm like, "Oh my God, I can't possibly eat all this food." But I'm like, if I don't, my grandfather's going to be upset with me." And so I literally was with my partner last week, and we just finished lunch, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, I have events all night and all afternoon. When am I going to eat dinner?" And he's like, "Why are you even thinking about that? We just ate," kind of thing. So in my mind, the feeling of hunger, intuitively, like my mind thinks it's going to be uncomfortable. So is it actually uncomfortable, or have we been conditioned to believe that hunger is uncomfortable?
It actually physically feels uncomfortable when it's been overridden because the feeling of nothingness, that feeling when you were meant to stop, that balance feeling now feels like there's something wrong. There was a non-value-based belief is what I call it that says there's something wrong if you stop then. Something happened. You might have been punished. You had to please, like you said, your grandfather. And so that feeling of nothingness is a feeling that something is wrong, something is off, and it's uncomfortable. A non-value-based belief, when it gets internalized, feels like discomfort. So when people first start it, I say it's not going to feel good in the beginning to stop at a 5. That's why I usually will do with my process, I'll do a range. I start working with that hunger scale and I'll gradually bring them down because I don't know what we're dealing with. I don't know how many non-value-based beliefs are in there. So we need to start uncovering those and start turning them around because what happens with people is they'll get to a place and in order to please the hostess, in order to please somebody, or it's a time and somebody has made some food for you, they feel bad if they don't eat. So I work with that because if somebody has prepared your food, you want to make sure you're hungry when you get there.
Definitely, definitely. This is also something that I've noticed within myself and other people, but I'll stick to myself. And so I pretty much panic the moment I feel really hungry, especially if I'm not around food or I don't have a meal prepped or anything planned. So why do we panic in that moment?
Yeah, I'll explain that panic, and it's very real. You feel it. It's like, oh my word, if I don't get something to eat right now, I'm gonna die. That's what it feels like in that moment. Well, what is surfacing when you feel that hunger? Are all the feelings that you haven't dealt with internally, that you haven't turned around, I call them turnarounds, haven't dealt with on a regular basis. That's why I do it gradually, because if there's a ton of non-value-based beliefs and you wait until you're hungry, I call it the growling two. It's a hunger scale that I work with. If you wait until then, you're going to feel like you're going to die because there's just this feeling in you that there's so much discomfort and it's magnified hunger. Because would you believe that when all of those beliefs get turned around internally, hunger is very, very calm and very strong. Whenever you feel that rush to eat, that panic, There's a lot going on. So I work with that, and I work with calming people down, and having them understand that. In addition, I gradually cut down the quantities because that tool of eating has been used to calm the feeling of discomfort in the gut. That's why I said not every feeling below the neck is hunger. There's a lot of discomfort that I'm tapping into, which is why this process, it is a detailed process to gradually change that, because you're basically changing the chemistry of your body, because food is chemistry. So you can't just all of a sudden say, I'm just going to eat when I'm hungry. That won't work. There's too much in there. There's too much going on. It's like you said, I would feel panicked if I waited until I'm hungry. So that's where I do a very detailed process with the hunger scale. So let's say on a hunger scale from 0 to 10, and your audience can do this, and you can as well. Lisa, I've had you do this before. 0 starved, 10 is stuffed, 5 is the feeling of nothingness. You're balanced. You're not hungry, and you're not crowded. If you go down to the 4, you're starting to feel a little hunger. 3, now it's getting a little bit stronger, and that's where people start to panic, because if they hit the 2 and we haven't cleared out non-value-based beliefs, it's going to feel like, oh my word, I'm going to die, because this is your identity. It's like, if I don't eat right now, I'm just going to die. And so that's why I work with where I start the people, because I don't know where they have started. Like some people might start when they felt the feeling of nothingness, thinking that was empty, I need to eat. I had one client that said, oh, I see where all this extra food came from. So I've got to work with that. But on that scale from 0 to 10, 0 being starved, 10 being stuffed, 5 the feeling of nothingness, 6 you're a little bit more crowded, 7 a little bit more, 8 is like, okay, why did I eat so much? And then you get to 9 and 10, you just go, I just want to sleep, because now it's like way over. And the audience can now put their mind in their stomach. And what number would you be at in this moment? So I'll ask you, Lisa, in this moment, what number would you be at if you drop your mind in your stomach and drop into that idea of that scale?
I would say I'm right in the middle right now. I'm about a 5.
5, the feeling of nothingness. Your body has been taken care of. You don't need to eat. You don't, you know that you'll get hungry again. You're not crowded. You feel energized. Now, there's so many other things that come into play below the neck. You have a physical feel of tiredness. Some people eat because they think that jolt of food will give them energy, but it's false energy, because what's the body really asking for if it's not hungry, but you're tired? It's asking for rest. It's asking for a break. Then people will say to me, but what if I have to get something done and I just need to get it done, but I'm tired. I said, then you need to acknowledge that you're tired. Don't bury it. Feel it. Feel the tiredness, because you need to feel what how you're feeling so that you will take the action that's needed, a break, a rest, something to take care of that. And it might not be until later. Okay, when I get done with this, then I can rest. So it's acknowledging every feeling, what's going on below the neck. And there's a lot of things that are going on, because your gut brain, that's what I'm tapping into, has all of these non-value-based beliefs and value-based beliefs. And value-based beliefs means there's no discomfort. But when we haven't worked through them yet, that discomfort from the non-value-based beliefs magnifies the feeling of discomfort, because that's that feeling that people want to run from. They want to run to eat, that urgency, that rush to eat. They want to get there because they want to calm down first. They want to connect to themselves. Well, if that feeling you're running from, that feeling that feels like that urgent need to eat, you're running from yourself. That's why I come back when I said you need to acknowledge if you're tired. Acknowledge the feeling. Just by acknowledging it and naming it keeps you connected to yourself. Because that urgency, that rush to eat, means you're running from yourself. That's a real key that says, ah, something's going on, and this hunger is magnified. So that's where I start, and I really work through all of those beliefs. That's the difference in my process, because that needs to be understood, because it's your identity. It's who you are internally.
Interestingly, I'm having a flashback to being in my 30s and I was dealing with a lot of anxiety. And what I found was if I was very, very, very anxious to the point of like not wanting to be around anybody else and not quite a panic attack yet, but like really, really anxious, I found that if I ate, that anxiety level would go down. And so whenever I would feel that anxiety coming up, I would go force myself to eat something because I felt better after, which I never understood why. But now that you're talking about the emotional side of that, that the gut holds, traumas and values and emotions just like our head brain does. And so can you dig into that at all? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
That's what I deal with day in and day out, what you just described. Because before I came on, I was just talking to a client. She's a student in college and she's got these exams coming up. And so when I work with people, I said, before you eat, text me, contact me, because I need to talk to them as soon to, or as close to that moment as possible so that I can explain to them that feeling. So she texted me. She said, I've got all these tests coming up. I just feel I need to eat. And then she knows that, okay, if she texts me, and one time she said, yeah, but if I text you, you're going to talk me out of eating and I just want to eat. So we've got her past that point now. So she texts me. And so that feeling, that anxiousness, that anxiety, as you called it, about the test for her was what it was. I said, okay, we need to stay connected to that anxiety, that feeling. You have a right to be a little anxious about the upcoming tests. You're just a little concerned about that. Stay with that anxiety. And I've taught her also to add value-based beliefs to counter it, because we need to undo that non-value-based belief. And it's not that one's not non-value. It means that we need to connect to it. We need to be honest with ourselves and say, I know I'm upset about these upcoming tests. I know I'm feeling anxious about these upcoming tests. That keeps you with yourself. So you're not running from yourself. Then we need to add something that will create that calm. And now she's used to talking a lot better to herself. I said, well, what do you know for sure about your upcoming tests? She said, well, I know I've really studied for this one, and I know that if I really blow it, I can take it again. So all of a sudden now she's putting in a knowing of what is true. It's not affirmations, it's what's actually true, because affirmations won't work. But if there's a belief in there that's countering that, it's not going to penetrate. So what's true? So she named to me what's true. And what was true is she knew she had studied. She knew that if she really blew it, she could take it over again. And she said, okay, now I can start feeling it calm down. So she's no longer running from herself. And then what happens is the desire to eat thought goes away, because we also talked about how in that moment, many times she would say in the past, oh, I don't care. It doesn't matter. It just really doesn't matter. She said, until the first 5 bites, and then I've blown it, and then I overeat because I try to fix that feeling, and it just goes on and on, and then I'm miserable. And I said, yes, and now you've lost all that time and energy. And so with this, she's starting to learn now that it's really crucial. If she feels that strong desire to eat and she can't get past it, she'll text me. And that's what's really crucial. And then if I read that text and I think, okay, we need to talk, then we talk, and then we go through the process of owning that feeling. You got to own that feeling. You got to name it. You got to own that feeling. And then we start working on what does she know for sure? What does she know? Get that knowing, because the knowing is what's calming. And once you understand that whole desire to eat, why is that thought even there? And what does that desire to, what does that eating do for you? It doesn't change the fact that she's got the test, doesn't do anything different. But what it does is it says, no, you get back on yourself, you calm down, and you feel good. That's what it does. And it does it too well. That's the problem. And so by talking her through it and getting to some knowing, she was starting to feel a bit better. And I know as soon as I get off that phone, I'm going to say to her, but you're not going to feel as good as if you ate something. So know now that you, if you just stop now, because at her time that I was talking to her, she's about ready to go to bed, that it's important now to just stop, feel a little bit of discomfort, and stay with it and then end the day.
I feel like this method of yours could be used for things like tiredness as well. Because I, as you were speaking, I often relay tiredness and like feel guilty about it. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's 2 o'clock. I'm tired. I've been working all day, so I'm going to grab a coffee or some caffeine to, amp myself back up again. Because the thought of, not being productive is somehow bad in the world. So it's so interesting. I really just could talk about this all day long. I'm curious about this one though. So many people now are fasting, and so many people do unhealthy things because they want to lose weight. And part of that is depriving oneself of eating at all. How can we tell the difference between healthy hunger and unhealthy deprivation?
I love your questions there. You're spot on with that because this whole process works with if you've ignored hunger. Hunger is your anchor. Now, if the hunger, if you have storage, there's a whole different deal. If I'm working with people that have storage, it's different than if I'm working with people who have just these obsessive thoughts and just tend to overeat and then back it up and really are at the weight they want to be. And I've also worked with the extreme of where they've just totally cut off hunger. They don't even feel it. They just override it, and finally they're just in their head not feeling hunger at all. And any feeling of food at that point feels like they're going to be fat. So it depends on it depends on where the storage is. And I call it storage. I never call it fat because it's stored information. There's a lot of information. That's why I always panicked when they did that suction thing because I thought, oh my word, there's all the information. And now they have to know how to handle life without the tool of eating, and there's been no processing done. But if they've overridden hunger and overridden hunger, because I've worked with many on that and also, and I still come back to having them feel their body. And at first that is a panic because they don't want to go back there. The reason they left is because they had so much food noise. They didn't want to pay any attention to their body whatsoever. There was too much noise in their head. So they left hunger. Then the noise came in the head. And then they thought, I can't even function. So then they just eliminate the noise and just simply don't eat. And that just feels like freeing at first. I remember one time I started working with someone who came in from the East Coast, and she had been anorexic. In fact, the last thing was she was hooked up to tubes, and she felt so powerful because they had to feed her through the tubes, which was really, really sad because in her mind, that was power. She won. And so when I started working with her, when I started with her, I said, just imagine. I said, you can take this back. I said, but you've got this whole thing figured out. You know how to not eat. We've got that down. We got to figure out how to eat. I said, but first of all, I want to know, let's just put that on a shelf for a second. Let's say that you have the perfect body. You have the perfect look. Anything you eat, you can eat whatever you want. Let's just imagine that hypothetically for a second. I'll give you back all that other stuff. And I said, but let's say that that exists. I said, now what are you going to do? And she looked at me, and it was this blank look on her face. She said, well, I've always been told I've got to resolve this. I said, no, you've got to have a place to go. You really need a place to go. And then she said, but if I tell you what I want to do, you'll think I'm crazy. I said, no, just get out what you want to do. She said, I want to be a trainer, a physical trainer. I said, great. Now we have a place to go. We had to get that in place first. Otherwise, it's like dropping into Never Never Land. You have no place to go. You don't know where you're going. So it depends on if they have storage, if they don't have storage, if they're at the weight that they want to be. And to me, everybody's meant to be what feels good inside their own body, but they've got to be in their body first. And if they've left their body, I've got to have them reclaim their body.
For sure. Well, I definitely feel like hunger amplifies my emotional state. And if I wake up and I'm anxious, for instance, or if I'm in my, luteal phase, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it like luteal phase of my period. That's when I'm hungry the most. And if I don't eat in the morning, I feel like my anxiety is amped up. And I do feel a major shift when I have some food in the morning, and it just helps me get through that those times. But at certain weeks, it's not so much. So that's what I like about your method is it's a scale of like right now, what's happening right now. But so many diets surely teach people to eat before they're hungry. And so what happens when we stop listening to our body's natural signals?
It becomes confusing, and you leave yourself. You leave the messages. See, there are nine messages to one, from the gut to the head. And if we leave our body, we're missing all those subtle messages. That's what people are literally amazed at, as how much information starts surfacing once we start putting eating in order. Once we start having that real clear line, because you need to eat. So, but you need a clear line. What's that clear line? The clear line comes to us by listening to our natural eating boundaries. If we don't have those natural eating boundaries, now we go to a head because if we don't have that, how are you going to determine what you eat or you don't eat? You're going to either go by a clock, you're going to go by a rule, you're going to go by something, and then something distorts that, and now you've lost it. I've had one woman who I've worked with, and the rules of eating were absolutely distorting everything. I mean, it was taking up all of her thinking. It's funny because I just saw a cartoon that came across, and I sent it to her. She said, "I saw the same thing," and it was. And she was great, good comedy act where she said, "Okay, but if you're naturally thin, well, I would think that now you should be able to run a Fortune 500 company with all of the time and energy you have." Because if you're not thinking about what you're eating, what you're not eating, what you're doing, what you're not doing with your food, what else is there to think about? Because that became the constant thread of thinking in her mind. So that kind of thinking is what gets distorted when you leave your natural eating boundaries. And that's the damage that it does. And what happened with her is she was a striver. She was an athlete and a driver in her career. And what ended up happening, she didn't listen to the subtle messages, and she snaps a hamstring because she wasn't paying attention to it. So she literally needed to drop into her body to be able to heal it. So that's what's been fascinating, because she never knew there were even thoughts there. She didn't even know there were thoughts coming up from her gut brain. Now she's listening like crazy and go, "Whoa, I didn't even know those thoughts were there." And when you talk about tiredness, that's the other reason you need to be connected to your natural eating boundaries, because your body will send you messages, subtle messages. "I'm getting a little bit tired." Okay, now you've kind of gone over the top. And when you have that strong desire to eat, it's like you've gone over the top, and you can't use your own thoughts and actions now to ride through. You need that little buddy. I always call it a little buddy that comes along and helps you. And so we continuously eliminate that, but it's a process, because food is chemical. You can't just automatically do it. And that's why when I used to run seminars, like an all-day seminar, just to give all the information, I thought, "No, I can't do that," because they'll walk out and they will think the minute they eat when they're not hungry, they failed. And that's not it at all. So I do it in a process, a detailed process, because you gradually need to cut that back. And you grad and like I said, eating is easy. It's life that's complex. So once I get eating in order, now I become that life coach. Because I teach them now how to handle those feelings with their own thoughts and actions. We take away the tool of eating, and you gradually reclaim how to handle those internal feelings with your own thoughts and actions, not with food. And so your confidence just increases as the extra storage falls off if you need to lose weight, or it comes on when you need to put on the weight. It happens naturally.
I was just going to ask you about the role of the modern food culture. So what role does that play in all of this?
In terms of what they're thinking people should eat or should not eat, or the fact that
I
they're
guess
doing.
just the way that our food culture is. Like, I feel like it plays a role in disconnecting us more from our bodies. And so Because everything that we do is kind of revolves around food and eating, and everywhere I look, there's ads for foods, and there's fast food restaurants everywhere. So I was just interested as to your take on that.
Oh, I love that question because we want get-togethers with people and food. But what it has done, and this is why it's even more crucial to have these boundaries, because food is everywhere. I mean, you won't have to worry about finding food. You go to the gas station, then you walk into the gas station. There's tons of food. Everywhere you go, there's tons of food, which is why we need these natural eating boundaries to ground us. So no matter what's out there, like that's like when people want to make their kitchen safe, I said, no, you got to bring your favorite foods, because if you don't, you're going to build up deprivation feelings. And then when you finally do have it, you're not going to have the boundaries. You don't own the start. It's all about the start and the stop. But because there's so much food, because the advertisements, there's so much advertising about food and what you, and then there's all this research about what you should eat, what you shouldn't eat. It's like massive information. So what I do is I continuously bring them back to that grounding feel, so it's not confusing. It's solid. It becomes solid. But they're also doing all these things where eating on the run. I thought, no, everybody that I work with, the first thing they do is sit. I got to have them sit. And people say, well, but I don't have time to sit and eat. And I said, okay, if you don't have time to sit and eat, you don't have time to eat. And when you do have time to sit, you can eat. But if I gave you back all the time and energy you were spent worrying about eating, wondering what you should eat, wondering what you shouldn't eat, and gave you back all that energy, so none of that was taking up your brain space or your energy or your frustration, you would have more time and energy. So with this process, I give them back their time and energy. And like people say too, it's like, and then I don't buy as much food because I don't eat as much food and I don't order as much food. So it even helps me with my income. So it's a great process of bringing people back to their natural eating boundaries. But now I understand when you said the modern culture, because food is everywhere. And now we have the meds to get rid of all the food. I feel sorry for these poor restaurants because one day they're eating like a ton and serving a ton because that's what people want. Now you have the GLPs. Now they've got to kind of balance everything out because the whole world swings with it. It's amazing. But if you're anchored in your own eating boundaries, that stuff doesn't affect you.
Yeah, I mean, I was at a movie the other week, and the commercials were like for, Dairy Queen, and like I don't even like sweets, but I was finding myself craving an ice cream after, like it's powerful, and the visuals and the way that they mess with our psychology to make it look like it's something so amazing, and the sugar. So it can be hard sometimes to ground ourselves, especially I find at nighttime. If I am, I don't watch a lot of television, but I mean, I know people do out there, and there's a lot of commercials, and like I said, every second one is food. And when you're seeing that, and then you're like, oh, it's commercial time. I'm gonna go out, get up and grab something and come back to bed just because it's something to do. So I like how you address that and developing
Yes.
these food boundaries.
Yeah. When you ground yourself, and I want to go back to one thing that you said about the tiredness or the right to just relax, which also ties into the television. Do you really have the right to relax? And I was working on that, and one non-value based belief that just busted through one of my clients. It was like, oh my word. It was like the weight of the world came off of her because she was always told if she took time for herself. And she would hear this from her mother when she was little, she was being selfish and she needed, she was a driver. She was a real aggressive person with, love to learn, love to achieve, love to do all that. She needed breaks. And her husband would always tell, just take a break, take a break. And something was blocking her from actually taking that break. And I kept working with it. And I said, okay, there's a belief in there. There's a belief. I said, what does it feel like when I say, I have the time to take a break? And she said, oh my word, that just panicked me. No, I don't. I'm doing something wrong. And then we figured out where it came from. So it was, I don't have the right to take time for myself or I will be selfish. But when you're connected to your gut, you're not selfish. It's a respect to self. And it's a mutual respect. That's the beauty of this process, because I kind of lay the groundwork with mutual respect of what gives you and sustains your life food. So as you go out in the world, it's mutual respect when you connect to your gut to really pay attention to what you need, because usually it's a need that's missing. And some people say, well, yeah, but if you just do what you want all the time, you'll be narcissistic. I said, well, that's if you're not connected to your gut. You will feel it if you're doing something to somebody else, because our groundwork is mutual respect. And so the thing is, people I work with, they usually go internal because they eat instead of lash out. That's usually what kind of happens. So usually I'm always working with people respecting themselves. And that's where I get kind of even into the spiritual. It's like, love your neighbor as yourself, not instead of yourself.
Do you think it's possible that many people have gone years without really experiencing what true hunger is?
Without a doubt, because it might have been buried from infancy and feeling mm-hmm. that it was wrong. So they don't want to feel hunger. They want to bury it. They want to get rid of it. They want to eliminate it because it's too much of a panic. It feels bad. And so what's the only thing, if you're feeling bad in your body, that will change that? And the trouble is it's food or a substance or something. So it's that feeling that I never want it to surface. I never want it to get to the top. And like I said, from the beginning of this thing, it's truly a gift. But when you start out, it's panic. Like what you said, it's panic. And you can't just all of a sudden drop into hunger and say, okay, I'm just going to eat when I'm hungry. There's a lot that goes into it before you can really feel that calm, strong feeling of hunger, because hunger is that core connection to yourself. It becomes like a feeling like, I love to feel hunger. It feels good because I can taste the food better. It feels like my body is asking for it now. It's a whole shift that the people I work with go from fearing hunger, bearing hunger, never knowing what it ever felt like, never think they ever want to feel it again, to, I love feeling that strong hunger. When my stomach starts growling at me, like the two, I call it the number two on the hunger scale, growling at me, it's talking to me and said, okay, now I feel like I'm in my body. I have the right to eat. I'm going to enjoy the taste. And I just worked with one client who is so much in her head, and she's finally dropping into her body. And I said, okay, just get all of the head chatter out. When you drop into your body, just say, okay, feel that hunger and taste the food. And I just got these words from her, and she just texted me. She just said, it feels like there was a little food left and I didn't want it. I didn't even feel deprived or felt a need to finish that little bit of food because I could feel I was done. Because we'd worked on the range, the 2 to 5, she'd kind of worked on it, but really, really being in it and really feeling like any chatter was causing a haze to the natural eating boundaries.
If hunger could speak, what do you think it would be trying to tell us?
Please honor me. Don't fear me. Please pay attention to me. I'm talking to you. I will tell you when you need to eat. Go on and live your life. Don't be sitting by the refrigerator waiting to be hungry. That's what if I was a hunger voice, that's what I would be saying.
Yeah, no, it's true. I was also taught not to go to bed hungry, that if you go to bed without eating dinner, that you're not going to sleep well. I just feel like there's all these things that we've been taught and told that affect our mental state. And so, yeah, it just that fear mongering, about around food and being hungry. It's such an interesting conversation for sure.
Yeah, when you mention, like I said, I just worked with the young girl from college, and they say, okay, now you're a little bit hungry, just go to bed. Let the body rest, not digest. The body wants to rest when it goes to sleep, not digest. What happens and why people might not sleep as well is because if you're a little bit hungry, any non-value-based beliefs that I'm continuously working with might be surfacing. And I always say, okay, if you can't sleep, then get up, write down what's going on, because that information I need. It's like, I need all your thoughts. I need that thoughts. And that's why when they say cut out your food noise, I go, oh my word, I need to hear those thoughts, because they're coming from someplace. Are they coming from non-value, or are they coming from value-based? I need to know those thoughts. But that's where I just worked with her. So she was just a little bit hungry. She said, I feel so light. I feel good. I said, that's when you want to go to sleep. The body can now rest.
So what changes when someone stops fighting hunger?
What changes it? Now they become curious when they're not hungry and they still want to eat. When they're not feeling that hunger, why? And then they start seeing that. One client said, I feel like I'm living a naturally thin person in the morning, and then in the afternoon, I have a whole different personality because, and so I'll compare them. I'll help them compare. Okay, what did that hunger feel like in the morning before everything started to surface and life started to surface and it became complicated and things were happening? And all of a sudden, you were absorbing things you probably shouldn't absorb, or now you're awake more and some of those non-value based beliefs are being lifted from you, and they can feel, they can magnify that hunger. I said, compare what it was like from the morning to the afternoon. I'm always looking for that one ray where I go, okay, now you finally feel it. Now you feel what hunger felt like when you didn't feel panicked when it happened. Like people, when they first wake up in the morning and they might feel that hunger and there might not be any panic. I will use it anytime I can find something somewhere where they have a glimpse of what it's meant to feel like. Because it's unknown. This territory of the gut brain has been so ignored for so many years. And it's where all the information is. It's where regulating your nervous system comes from. That's where I talk about the calm. And there's all kinds of tools that we use to really calm that internal nervous system.
What are some practical ways that people can start reconnecting with their hunger signals?
I would start the way I start with everybody. When they first start, I said, before you eat, sit. Just sit. Even if you're not hungry. And then just ask yourself, where am I? Drop your mind in your stomach, say, where am I on this hunger scale? And in the beginning, I don't even have them wait until hunger. I just need to get them to sit. I need to have that movement stop from their life and eating. I need to separate eating from the movement in life. And that can be a whole nother discussion about how we infused eating and movement. That's like a whole nother section of my process. But I need to stop the movement in order for the mind to pay attention to the hunger. So I always say, whenever you start to eat, make sure you are sitting. And then people say, well, what if I'm driving to sitting? I thought, no, you can't be driving sitting because you're going to need to pay attention. I'd rather have you pay attention to the road and instead of your stomach. And so they've had all these different things to be able to eat while you're driving. I'm just going, okay, now that's created a whole another modern culture of food, eating while you're driving. So I always say not to drive and that you are sitting. And that you're not moving, because that's sitting, it's like you know you are sitting. This is how I start everybody. You know you are sitting. You're not questioning whether or not you're sitting or not. I need to create an awareness of a connection to self so that they know that they are starting to eat, because there's so much mindless eating. You don't know, you walk by the refrigerator, you grab something, by counter, you grab something, and you don't remember that. And all of a sudden, you'll get to the end of the day and say, well, I didn't eat anything. Well, if you added up all the nibbles you and put it on a plate, you would probably be surprised. But that awareness is really key, in addition to the fact that you're using it for something else. And that's where I start. So I've got to have them sit and eat. And that people say, well, that's easy. I'll just sit every time I eat. And if they're using it for movement, they will feel how difficult it is to just sit and eat, because now we're starting to separate out that tool of eating from your life. We're eliminating that tool of eating, of handling when you feel stuck, when you feel bored. I can list a zillion things. It's what people use eating for instead of to feed hunger.
How do you suggest people handle the emotional side then? Like, once people start to reconnect with their bodies and they're like, okay, no, I'm not hungry. I'm actually really anxious or really upset or really excited right now. How do you ground yourself into your body and move forward in a healthy way that, is kind of accessible to anyone listening?
Yeah, that's a gradual process that I'm gradually teaching. And that's the beauty of this process, because if you can't handle it, you're going to eat. But it's not a failure. It's just something is going on and we need to explore it. So It's when you're feeling something, first sit and you go, okay, I'm not hungry. And if you feel like that anxiousness in your gut, just go, okay, start asking yourself, because that's kind of what I do with my clients. And then I teach them how to ask themselves, what is going on? What's the feeling? If you just name it, it will help dissipate the feeling, just naming it. And then you just ask yourself, if there's anything I can do about it in the moment. And then I always use the term, if you can't do something about it in the moment, but you need to address it at some point in time. You can't just ignore it. You never can ignore what the body is telling. That's like my clients will go, boy, every time I try to ignore it, it's like a boomerang. It just doesn't work. I said, no, the wisdom of the body is very, very strong. We've just not tapped into it. So when they feel that feeling, and they, let's say that you don't even know, and then sometimes I'll say, well, just guess. And if you don't understand, just say, okay, I know I don't understand it now. Just by saying, I know, will help ground you. Because why are you eating? Because you know how to eat. You know how to chew, eat, and swallow. Once you understand what eating is doing for you, and it does everything. That's the unfortunate thing. It does everything. It moves you from an unpleasant state to a pleasant state. It moves you from an inactive state to an active state. Chewing tastes pleasurable, and it brings you back to yourself. The food comes back in yourself, and you're grounded. So once you understand what it's doing, then as you do the hunger scale, and just write down what the hunger number is. Maybe you start from a 4 to a 7. Maybe you get a little bit hungry and you kind of panic. Well, then start from a 4 to a 7. Then once you know, okay, I can handle that, and the feeling is starting to surface, the beauty of this process is it will only go as fast as what you are willing to handle with your own thoughts and actions. So there's no real panic when I'm working with people. There's no real panic, and there's no real angst, because that's my job, is to make sure that they understand every moment. That's why it's a moment-to-moment process when I work with people. But if they first start by just sitting, and then if they're really anxious, they know they're not hungry, but they're really anxious, just say, what is it? Name it. What am I upset about? And the thing that they're most upset about will surface to the top. It's like the cream surfaces to the top. And then if you can deal with that, but just by saying, I know, will help ground the person.
So even how much mental energy?
Excuse me. I would, and a lot of times I'll say, just say, I know, I don't know right now. And that helps them.
I love that. How much mental energy would become available when food is no longer running the show?
So much. That's like, I love that cartoon, because it's like, okay, if I didn't think about this and I freed up my creative mind, that's why I always thought, if I can just get everybody to put eating back in order, our creative souls, our creative mind can surface and do all kinds of things. It's amazing what can be done. The mind would be free. And that was the joke in that cartoon, was like, well, then, oh my word, what would I do? What would I think about? And I thought, oh my word, there's lots of things to think about. And that also came when I said, just let your infant, the infant will let you know. And I had one parent say, well, then what am I going to teach him? I thought, okay, your mind is saturated with eating and not eating. And so by freeing that up, it really helps being engaged in life. And one person described it, she described it beautifully, because when you eat out of order, it really takes away from the pleasure of life, because it shadows over when you take away that eating. Like she said, at first when I started taking away that eating, it felt like my life was gray. Like eating had been the color of my life. That had been the focus. Like there was nothing that I liked better than eating. That would became the focus. As she started taking that away, she said, at first it felt gray. Then all of a sudden, the color started to surface again. All of a sudden, I saw the beauty in a flower. All of a sudden, I saw the good feeling of just having a normal day, because we have four other pleasure senses. And so when somebody says, but it tastes so good, I wanted to keep eating, I said, you're just still looking for more pleasure. But taste has very specific boundaries. We have four other pleasure senses to help us add that pleasure to our life. We were meant to have pleasure. And if we're really upset about something, to use one of those four other pleasure senses, that's when you're asking a specific tool, to help calm that. Because maybe there's a death in the family. Well, that's not going to change. It's not going to go away. There's nothing you can do about it. But that's where you use the other four pleasure senses. Maybe you listen to music. Maybe you go for a walk, touch to the ground, movement, any other pleasure sense other than taste that is an action-oriented, pleasurable to you. And that's why I have people list a lot of things that are pleasurable to them. And at first, they may say, well, there's nothing pleasurable as you. There's nothing any more pleasurable than eating. As I start working with them, pretty soon that list starts to grow. And now they start adding pleasure in just a lot of the normal things in life, which is really exciting for them because they go, oh my word, I've been missing out on life. Eating has hazed the joy of living.
Shirley, thanks so much again for being here today and for this really amazing conversation. Please tell everyone more about your work and where people can find you.
They can always find me on my website. And the book that I published a long time ago in 1991 is available for free on my website. I wouldn't change anything in terms of the foundation. I just have added a lot of tools. So if they go into my website, they can sign up for a free half an hour consultation. If something resonated with you and you want to ask something more about a course, because now I have a course. I have an online course, which is great because I'm a teacher at heart. I have handouts. I have videos. I have checkpoints. I have, sheets that show that, okay, you've gotten this far. There's 13 parts to it. Now you can move on. It lays the gradual foundation. So they can sign up for a free half-hour consultation to ask me more about that. They can email me, shirley@energetics.com. There's all kinds of different ways, or go to my website. Instagram, there's Energetics Method, and I give so many tools in there on what to do and if there's anything else, and that might give you like a little aha moment. That's what I'm always looking for. Because if people can do it on their own, that's great. That's what I was hoping with the book. But I realized we were getting further and further away from our gut brain, the natural eating boundaries.
Absolutely. Yeah, your Instagram is on point. I love all the tools and all the little snippets that you share. They're really powerful. So we'll make sure to have all of that in the show notes for the audience so they can access your stuff and learn more and get your book and contact you if they feel the urge to reach out. Yeah, and there's nothing to be ashamed of, right? Like we all have these struggles, and even if the person out there who is really grounded and, is really good at it, they still have their days. So it's nothing to be afraid of, or it's nothing to be ashamed of. So if you are struggling, reach out to Shirley and she can definitely point you in the right direction. Before we go today, I would love for you to speak out to the person out there who is fighting with their body and is just so unhappy and feels insecure. What is the first thing you want them to know today?
There's absolutely a way to feel joy in your body and enjoy the taste of food. Inevitably, people come to me and said, "You know what? I'm hopeless. I just I'll you'll start working with me and you'll say, there's no hope. There is nothing that can't be undone because everybody owns this." So there's the and everybody feels that feeling like, oh, I just won't get it. I just don't get it. So many times I have people come to me and they say, it just doesn't work. Nothing works for me. Nothing. I will be like this forever. And I can see what's happened in this world. And then they just give up and go on the drugs. And I go, oh my word, we have these natural tools. We just haven't learned how to connect to them. Everybody can do it.
I love that. And I love your talk so much. I love chatting with you. Thanks so much for all this valuable information. It's been so much fun.
Thank you. It's great to be with you as always, Lisa.
Yes, as me as well. I always enjoy these conversations so much. And our audience, thank you so much, you guys, for showing up and for listening, for paying attention, and for being brave enough to take those next steps to gain control, to not fight hunger. We've been taught to fear hunger, suppress hunger, to stay one step ahead of it, but maybe it was never the enemy after all. Maybe it was how we were guided. And the beauty of it is that we have a choice to take back that power and that control. As mentioned, we will have Shirley's information, including her website, her free book, her Instagram, and all of the things in her courses in the show notes so you can have access to her and what she is teaching the world. And it's such a valuable skill to learn. So thanks for tuning in and happy eating, everyone. Take care. Bye.